This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Okay, Place to Be Nation, welcome to the reaction show for Hell in a Cell 2016, where they decided not to give us one or two, but three Hell in a Cell matches. And guys, let me introduce the guys. We got, of course, Chris Zellner from Exile on Bad Street and Between the Sheets. And from the Titans and Brainbuster, we got Johnny Sorrow. So it's just the three of us tonight, and we're going to hop right into it. All right, the pre-show, they had a cruiserweight kickoff match, and that was Cedric Alexander, Lince Dorado, and Sin Cara versus Drew Gulak, Tony Nese. Is it Nese or Nese?
Nese.
Okay. I don't know. I missed the kickoff match, by the way, so full disclosure. And Daivari, okay? And I know one of the interesting things about this match was that Rich Swann, who scored a pin on Kendrick this week, wasn't even on the show. And so they were like, why couldn't they have thrown Rich Swann into this match?
He was on the pre-show being interviewed by the pre-show people talking about how he got a win. And he should be next in line for whoever wins the
No, they still could have showcased them in this match. That was kind of my point. But
I'm just saying, either way,
Johnny, yeah, you know what I mean, dude. Wrestling featured. Anyway, I'm not going to argue with you over semantics. But I do want to know your opinion on this match, Johnny. What did you think of this pre-show match?
I liked it. I thought it was the perfect kind of pre-show opening match that, you know, lots of high spots, and I was talking about Tony Nese. It's so funny. He was wearing a He-Man Masters of the Universe type thing coming down to the ring, which I got a giggle out of. And I don't follow Evolve and all that stuff, but the guys I know who do, or was like, oh, Tony Nese, he stinks. And I was like, well, maybe so. Maybe he just needed to be in WWE, because since he's been in WWE, I'm impressed with him. I like the guy. And I thought they just had a fun match full of high spots, and we have Sin Cara, though, now is in the cruiserweight, so he finally gets to be the big guy of a division, which I thought was kind of funny. But it was entertaining, so thumbs up.
What about you, Chris?
I was recording a little bit of BTS as that was going on. I still was watching it, but I wasn't listening to it. So I don't know what the sound was like, but from watching it, everybody, looked really good. Cedric Alexander is a guy who should be the guy that's the face of the division right now. He is a total package of everything. If they really need to try to get that over as far as in ring, his charisma inside the ring, he can talk. He has something about him. He has the star power about him. He's a guy that they need to definitely get out there. And he got the win tonight, so that was great for him.
I think that's where they're going.
Well, Swanee's getting the next shot because Swanee beat Kendrick on Raw. So, I mean, that's the obvious conclusion, but who knows? I mean, the way they've booked the Cruiserweights, and we'll talk about it in the title match, it's been odd at best.
As far as
this match goes, everybody looked good for what they were able to do, except for Sin Cara. He kind of was lost in the shuffle there, but it was fun. It was a fun match.
All right, well, let's get to the show. And they've done this in the years past where they'll start the show off with the Hell in the Cell, and then they'll end the show on a Hell in the Cell. And this year was no different. So we kick off the show proper with Roman Reigns versus Rusev for the U.S. title in the Hell in the Cell. And it kind of bothers me, man. We've seen in the past, I don't like the idea of starting with the cell and ending with the cell. I think if you're going to have more than one cell match, you just lower the cell once, and then you let the matches tell the stories and see if they can one-up each other. You know, I hate to use this company as a point of comparison, but TNA in the past has had successful, like, lockdown shows. Like where they do the cage match the whole show. I'm not saying that they have a great track record, but I'm saying we have seen successful lockdown shows where they'll lower the cage and then they'll have multiple cage matches back to back and still have the crowd engaged. So it's not like it can't be done. You know what I mean? I mean, it's one of those things where it has been proven it could be done. The NWA used to do it, where they'd have back-to-back cage matches and still have the crowd going nuts. So I like the idea of the Hell in the Cells. Just if that's your feature attraction, lower the cage once and make all three of them kind of mean something and follow each other. And if they can't follow it, then maybe the one before it shouldn't have, or the one after shouldn't have been in the hell, in the cell. God, that's confusing. Anyway, Johnny, your thoughts on this opener, buddy?
Well, and just quickly to that point, TNA can never afford the equipment to have it lifted and lowered. So there you go.
they only have
one choice.
That's a good retort, okay. But that's not the point. The NWA was still badass. Well, they were putting
they
that shit up.
Either. Do you remember going to shows back then?
I remember them constructing it by hand.
You'd sit there. You're all hyped up for the main event.
It doesn't matter, though.
Spend
the
there
point,
20 minutes while they're building a cage.
I still contend that they can still just lower it once to kind of give the importance of the cage and stick it at the end as the main event.
Well, I like it because I like it spaced out. But anyway, to the match itself. And to the point of I myself also, Mr. Apologist guy, going down like, three? Really? But I thought they managed to make it work based on the spacing and how each match was booked and what little extras you're going to put in. And this one was just like hoss fight. Hell in the Cell, like just rough, nothing too flashy, you know, just like just banging and hitting really hard and I really really enjoyed it. I thought this match kicked ass. It started off a little slow, but then I thought it really got in a high gear. And for me, you get to the end and you got a recreation of me seeing a chain around Greg Valentine's mouth from the match with Roddy Piper at Starrcade 83, and I'm seeing a chain around Roman Reigns' mouth while he's pulling him up in the accolade on the stairs, and I just popped, you know, big thing. When he got the chain, Rusev did, and he bites on it to make sure it's hard, and I'm like, oh, there's such good little touch work going on in this match, and I really, really enjoyed it. The crowd was weird, because they didn't want to cheer Reigns, and there'd be some there who were cheering for Rusev, immediately getting the Rusev sucks response, because they're like, oh, we're not taking it that far. We're not cheering for no goddamn Cammy, not in Boston. But I thought it was a hell of a kickoff. I love this match.
Chris?
Yeah, the thing about the Reigns-Rusev matches, The big matches, they normally do start slow and build their way up, and this was no different. And I was interested to see how the three cell matches would be presented on the show tonight, and all three of them were presented differently, which was good. This one, like Johnny said, was like a hoss fight inside a cage, a lot of, you know, hard-hitting offense, guys just, you know, just pounding each other. Yeah, the spot that's going to be remembered is definitely the chain across the mouth. And, yeah, both guys come out here, and they turned it up as the match went on. I thought that the finish was kind of eh. I mean, we got all that stuff. You know, Rusev was, you know, had Reigns, you know, he had him in the accolade, like you said, and had him ready to go, and all of a sudden Reigns just pops up and hits the spear off the steps. 1, 2, 3. You know, I kind of wanted something a little bit more. But I mean, still, it was a hell of a match. Yeah. A hell of a damn match. And, yeah, both these guys are aces in my book. So
I just want to add this, Chris. I saw on Twitter, I'm not a guy who agrees with Brian Alvarez a lot, but I thought this was quite good. He mentioned, he's like, it's 2016 and I'm seeing guys hit each other with giant steel stairs while the crowd's cheering for them to use wooden tables. I thought that was fitting because that crowd was just hungry for tables all night long. And when Rusev didn't give it to them, you know, and instead grabs the kendo stick and gives them this look like, fuck you. That's a nice little spot.
All right. Well, let's move on. Next match, Dana Brooke versus Bayley. I don't know. I think that for me, I had high hopes for Bayley coming into the main roster, and I'm not saying that she still isn't Bayley. I don't know if being paired with Dana Brooke is what I want. I don't know, man. It just feels like something's missing. Maybe the intimacy of the NXT crowd. But anyway, thoughts on this match, Johnny?
Well, I think the whole point is, okay, they bring her in. She has to have an undercard feud, and they got Dana. I like Dana, but Dana's still got a lot to learn. You know, I thought she looked a lot better tonight than she did on Raw. But she's got a lot to learn, and Bayley's doing that, and they're going to move her on. You know, this is going to be over probably after tomorrow night, I'd imagine. They're not going to have a continued feud with Dana. This is done. She beat her clean, and that's it. But it was just one of those things where she's brought up. We all are hyped about her because we watch NXT. You know, they're still introducing her to that main audience, and you know, she got Dana. And like I said, Dana isn't that great. You know, I think she has potential, but you know, she has to work with that. She did a good job tonight working with her. And 1-2-3 gets the win, which is the way, you know, it had to be. You know, if they had had Dana win tonight, I would have been like, oh, that's fucked up. But no, they did the right thing. And I think Bayley now is moving on to better things and is going to get over just as much as she did in NXT. I think, because I think it's a no-brainer.
We would hope so. We never know with this company, man. Sometimes they surprise.
But you also never know how a big-time crowd's going to react to something that we liked on a smaller scale.
Yeah, but I don't know. The crowd reactions, there's a bigger issue going on there. And it's basically the company. It's a bigger company issue that is beyond Bayley. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Bayley's a great wrestler, but I think there's a bigger issue at play that we can talk about later. But either way, Chris.
Well, the deal with Bayley is they threw Bayley up there, you know, basically cold. And he said, oh, here she's the hottest free agent. Here she is. Boom. You know, right after, you know, losing in NXT in her last match. And there's no build. It's just, boom, she's out there. And, you know, a lot of people that watch Raw, SmackDown, whatever, don't watch NXT. You know, they don't watch it regularly. They don't know the backstory of the Bayley character. And it takes, you know, time to put somebody over like that, unless you're somebody like an Enzo Amore, you know, where you're so dynamic in your personality that you can get over quickly. And Bayley, they definitely have, you know, tried to downplay her some as they're building up Sasha and Charlotte and that feud. And Bayley's been on the back burner with Dana Brooke. And Dana, God love her. You know, she's really good outside the ring and doing what she does. She is not there yet inside the ring.
Yeah, because her trash talking is the best, but that's better served outside the ring.
Yeah, Bayley's got some issues, I think, psychologically, because, I mean, she did that thing this week where she talked about how much she misses being in NXT. And she's not the only one that thinks that way. You know, she's gone from being the top dog in NXT to now, you know, trying to make her name on the main roster, and it's kind of tough. And they've, you know, sanitized her character. A lot of the charm of what made her in NXT isn't there in WWE. And we've seen that with a lot of people from NXT when they come up. You know, they don't have that organically built persona in WWE. Is they're carrying it over into a totally different fan base. So that's the deal she's got to deal with now. Her winning tonight, of course, was the definite, and she did okay. I mean, it wasn't like the Raw match the other week where Dana totally fucked up the finish, which was her foot on the rope and didn't do it. And although Bayley, I think, hurt her shoulder, because right now on Raw Talk, people are saying that she's got a big old ice bag on her shoulder, and supposedly they showed clips of during the match where it looked like she hurt a little bit. I don't think it's serious, but from what we saw at the finish of the main event, I'm guessing maybe she'll get a title shot now. I don't know. But, yeah, she's in a spot where she's got to make her own name on the main roster, and we'll see what happens.
Right, but if you remember, the whole point was what everyone wanted amongst the people who watch NXT, who they do tend to listen to a lot sometimes, is when the fuck is Bayley getting called up? You know, that was you know, the talking point for a long time. That, like, it's about time. Why are they keeping her down there? So, you know, you're right about the bringing her right
well,
up.
Well, Nakamura's got that now. I mean, he's the one that's – he needs to be on the main roster. Well, you know, he should. He should be on the main roster. But if you had Nakamura on the main roster, who knows how he would be portrayed compared to how he's being portrayed in NXT. It
scares the hell out of me.
So, you know, yes, there's has been a lot of changes made in how things are done, but still the old man calls the shots in the end no matter what.
I read something, and I don't know if there's any truth to it, but I did read something about them thinking that Nakamura is someone they want to keep in NXT just because of that reason, to be the face of that as an actual brand.
Well, that's what Bayley, and that's what Bayley was, you know, for a year.
Right,
she was NXT.
But everyone was saying, well, and she was saying, like, on Jericho's podcast and stuff, you know, can't wait, you know, she's impatient to come up there. I read something about them saying, no, their plan for Nakamura is to keep him there as the face of that company.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, but, I mean, if you get called up, you better expect what's, you know, what could happen to you. So don't ask, you know, be careful what you wish for. You just might get it.
All right, next match. So next match was Enzo Amore and Big Cass versus Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson. In the weeks leading up to this, man, it really seemed like Anderson and Gallows were dead in the water, almost ever since they had that really bad skit, or what was it, Old Day? Was that the skit, Old Day?
Old Day.
Ever
yeah.
since then, it just seemed like they were dead, man. Like, they just kind of lost any edge that they came in with. They took these guys away from AJ Styles. But, you know, hey, you know, they're here on this show, and Enzo and Cass had a really fun opening segment. You know, I mean, the crowd loves playing along with these guys, but tonight, I don't know, I really enjoyed the deal. But anyway, Johnny, talk about the match, and now that Gallows and Anderson get a win after kind of just being toast for the last few weeks.
Well, they totally made that part of the story on commentary. They're talking about how they came in with a lot of hype, and they said to me in a backstage interview that they felt that they haven't lived up to it, and now it's getting serious. I mean, they're on commentary saying this. So, and then they get the win, so... And they again say, like, oh, now they're back on track. So that was part of the story. I just want to mention the fucking pop when Enzo and Cass's music hit was just like, Jesus Christ. I mean, I haven't heard a pop like that in a long time. You know, these guys are so goddamn over. It's crazy. Like you said, Chris, just before, but unless you're Enzo. But, and Cass, too. But Jesus Christ, people just adore these guys. And as far as the criticisms of, like, oh, it's another sing-along act. Yeah, who gives a shit? It's fucking huge. And they love them. And I thought they had a really fun match. And they're bulletproof as far as losses go. At least at this point, Enzo and Cass are. So the right team went over. And I thought they actually had a really fun match. I enjoyed the hell out of it. I love watching Enzo just get bounced around like a fucking ping pong ball. You know, and Big Cass hit giant boots. So, thumbs up.
What about you, Chris? Do you agree that the right team won over, or no? What did you think about the match?
I will agree the right team went over in a sense. Because they need some freshening up as in the tag division. I was hoping that Cesaro and Sheamus would have won the title tonight. We'll talk about that later. But, yeah, I mean, Enzo and Cass is interesting because, like, Johnny's right. Enzo, he's over no matter what because the fans are into his deal. And he can lose without a problem. It's how long is that team going to stay together? How long before they, you know, eventually they're going to break Cass away? And then go from there. That's why I don't think they'll. I don't think they're going to go full force with Enzo and Cass as the top team, unless they do the a breakup angle off of it. So I don't know. I mean, they're going to be fine as they are. Doc and Carl needed the win for sure for their character and their portrayal right now is they're trying to get back to basics. You know, they're not doing silly crap no more. They're just beating guys up. And I was hoping that this could have led to a Cesaro Sheamus versus Dr. Carl thing, which maybe could come down the line. Who knows? But, yeah, they needed the win. And the match was what it was. Enzo, he doesn't have to be a good wrestler if you don't. I mean, he's got to get the gap. You know, he does what he needs to do, and that's about it.
Well, the thing about Enzo, though, and here's my concern, and it's not even something that I'm going to say that's going to happen, but I'm kind of concerned because, like, at some point, New Day, who was over, they were kind of hip after not being hip, whatever. At some point, you know, you're going to have the substance to back up the style, you know. And I actually enjoy watching Enzo and Cass. I'm just saying, at some point, do you become a parody of yourself, or do you continue to kind of push the boundaries?
Well, okay, you know, you're right. You're definitely right on that. And that's where New Day's crossed the line. New Day has become a complete parody of themselves. They've gone too far and.
And here's another thing, Chris. Not only that, but I also believe that originally, because the company really wasn't paying attention to them, it was like these three creative guys left to their own devices, right?
It was organic.
Yeah, exactly. And once you let the writers and Vince take over, then it just loses all spontaneity and enjoyment. And that's what I'm kind of afraid will happen with Enzo and Cass. It's just something to keep an eye out for. Well, how are you going to defend it, Johnny?
I would say, but the thing is, New Day, you can tell when they've been given a Vince thing and when they're still doing stuff on that's completely their own, because they're in that handful, like Jericho.
They are.
They don't get scripts unless it's a Vince approved, I want you to do this, and then we get Old Day, and it stinks. These guys do not get scripts. They're like Jericho. There's a handful of guys that don't get them, and they're part of them. And I don't think they're a parody of themselves at all. I've got some other thoughts. I'm thinking the heel turn's coming soon, but anyway, that's you can tell when they get handed a Vince approved script because it's awful, and you can tell they don't like doing it.
And it kills some of that heat that they have. Man, I was at Mania this year. And New Day was over. Over. I mean, never mind the fact that they lost their match, right? That doesn't matter, right? But they were over, and they were hip. And man, nobody's talking about them. Nobody's, like, hyped up to see
them. It got too campy and too, you know. Overexposed. It's overexposed and too silly. No, it really is. Crowd tonight was not into them that
this
heavy.
Come on, this is Boston. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, but still, they're not what they were.
Right. Johnny, last year when we were talking about New Day, whether Dylan was on or Chris or whoever we'd have hanging out with us on these shows, absolutely were just praising New Day to the heavens. And I'm not seeing that around the internet at all anywhere.
People are tired.
Whether it's in our circles, place to be circles, PWO, DVD, like nobody is hyping New Day anymore, man. It's like it's kind of done.
But the thing is,
Johnny, and I'm not saying that as an insult. I'm just saying, though, I mean, we've had this pattern of doing these shows for the last 3 years where that's what you do. You enjoy the product that's given to you. Good for you, bro. It's not my thing.
Circles you're talking about are small circles.
That's actually who we're doing these shows for. Well, Place to Be Nation, the people who hang out, people that
Well, I'm not going to cater to their opinion.
That's why we're doing these shows.
Hold on. Here's the thing.
I'm not asking you to cater to anything, Johnny. I'm just saying, you asked who are these people, and I'm telling you who these people are.
The people
that were hyping them last year are not the same people, or the same people who are silent are over them or beyond it. You're not good for you. That's good. I'm glad that you're easily entertained. I'm saying, okay.
It'd be nice if it could be without an insult thrown in.
It's not an insult, man.
Oh, no, I'm easily entertained.
The way I observe the way you watch wrestling. It's not an insult at all, bud. I'm saying that's how I think that you view wrestling. You are easily entertained by this stuff. I'm not even calling that as a shot, man.
But it is.
My observation of you watching wrestling is you go, you party a little bit, you hang out, you barbecue. You have fun, and you're just entertained by this shit.
So I'm doing it the right way, is what you're saying. I'm watching an entertainment product the correct way. Okay, I'll take that.
No, I'm saying that you're entertained by the product you're given. That's what I'm saying.
Not always.
I wouldn't know. Chris, what were you going to say?
I work and deal with casual fans all the time at my job. And guys that don't go on the internet, don't care about internet, nothing like that. They just watch the shows. Even they're tired of New Day. Like, he says, God, I wish New Day would go away for a while. Even people like that, there is that sentiment around Johnny. It's not just internet circles. There's other people that feel that way. And they're not what they were. They're overexposed. I mean, they clearly are.
I agree. They're at the top.
And they're not the only ones.
It's in the crowd reactions too, man. It's in the crowd reactions.
This is why wrestling back in the day used to work so much better. Is because you could cycle people in and out. You can't do that now. That's why people get overexposed. I mean, hell, they talk about stuff wrong. It's been in 16 consecutive title matches on pay-per-views that he's worked. That's insane. The fact that one guy has worked 16 straight title matches on pay-per-view is nuts. It's nuts. That's why you need to have new people come in and out, freshen things up.
But to that point, with that thing about Seth Rollins, my buddy Chris, who sits and watches these with me every you met Chris.
I like Chris.
When they said that stat about Seth Rollins being in that many championship matches in a row, he looks at me and goes, wow, that's pretty awesome, right?
No.
I'm saying it. I'm just saying.
I mean, it's the same guy that's, on top all the time or in the position to be on top. This isn't, that's the thing. This isn't real sport.
I concede you're all right. Let's move on because we did say that we wanted to get through this.
We are going to move on. I just want to clarify one thing. Me, Chris, people I talk to, my buddy Steve Williams, who hung out with his crew at Mania, who dressed up as New Day, we want New Day to succeed. We want them to be – we want the wrestlers to be a lot more over than they are.
Well, Big E, I want Big E to be broke off solo and doing his own thing.
I think you can still have a singles acts within a group.
That's what I'm saying. He needs to be on his own doing singles things while still being in the group.
I say, okay, not on his own. Still
as a
singles feature. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the second Hell in the Cell. Kevin Owens versus Seth Rollins for the Universal title. I know they wanted to make a big deal out of the women's match. This kind of goes back to my point earlier. I don't like the idea of the title in the middle of the show. I don't know if it was like, Johnny likes it, the space in the Hell in the Cells. Hey, I don't have a problem with a men's title match below a women's title match. I just don't like it right here in the middle of the show, and the reason is because of the match following it. But either way, let's talk about this second Hell in the Cell match, Owens and Rollins. Johnny, what do you got?
Okay, well, this was the one that was going to be booked with all of the crazy high spots, outside interference, all that bells and whistles. That we get in some Hell in the Cell matches over the years. That was what this one was. And maybe 7-10 minutes of this, we were like in and out of conversation going, oh, look at that. And then talking about something else. But the second half of it drew us all in. Owens' work, I'm a huge fucking Owens fan. I like Seth Rollins, but I don't think he's the greatest. But for me, and what I like, as soon as Jericho came out and put himself in the cage, I'm having flashbacks to, not that it's as good or anywhere near as good as, of course, Lawler in the cage, and suddenly, it's Austin Idol and Tommy Rich, But I'm like, ooh. They locked him in the cage, and now there's two guys against one guy. I like that. So from there on in, I totally dug it. And I was waiting for he's going to somehow manage to beat the odds. And the fact that he didn't as a heel fan, I was like, this is awesome. They just beat the shit out of him. He'd get his hope spots. But at the end of the day, he still got the shit beat out of him. And he didn't even get to get some heat back by beating up Jericho when Jericho went back in the ring after the match. Jericho hits the code breaker and they just leave him laying. And I love the Jericho Owens or Owens Jericho act so much. It's one of my favorite things on television right now in wrestling, that I don't know who should have won. I say Owens should have won, and he did. And I love the way it happened. That's, you know, I love bad guys, and these are fucking bad guys. So second half of the match, I thought was really good. First half, I thought meandered a bit. So there you go.
All right, very good. And Chris, what about the point of putting the world title match in so early? And of course, your thoughts on the match.
It's the way they've laid out shows like this in the past, like on Manias and stuff, where they put, you know, time.
But do you agree matches. With it?
Do I agree with it? It didn't bother me. I kind of like it spaced out a little bit. It becomes overkill when you do it all and could say, if three of them especially do three back to back, like the match, to me, it's overkill. I understand your point, what you were saying earlier of the convenience, but I don't know. And you need a buffer. At least I think you do. So I didn't have a problem with it. Now the match here, I kind of was hoping that it would be what it was, and it was. These two right here, I mean, it's been a boring-ass feud, you know, for a lot of reasons. The highlight of the feud's been Jericho, you know, for all the shit he does, outside the ring, of course, not inside the ring. But, I mean, it just hasn't clicked. Owens and Rollins are too much alike in a lot of ways. This feud and their matches reminds me a lot of Ring of Honor's current booking. And the way, you have a lot of guys who are so much alike in there, and there's no clear cut face or heel in this situation, because the fans love Kevin Owens and, you know, they like Seth Rollins, but there's no hatred. That's the main reason why the main event was so special is because of the hatred there, which we'll talk about later. There's no hatred here. From, you know, that is conveyed from this. These two guys are going out there and they're having a match. You know, they're doing what they do. There's not nothing that makes you think, well, if these two, you know, guys were on the street, they would be punching each other in the face and, you know, they would be being locked up in jail for assaulting each other, some shit like that. And it's kind of, and I get that feeling a lot from like Ring of Honor matches and other matches like that. It's just, it's all like exhibitions in a way, glorified exhibitions in the recent Ring of Honor times. And this had that feeling of it. We're just doing moves for the sake of moves. There's not the deep psychology behind everything that you kind of want in a match like this, which was, you know, it is what it is. But at least they went with the overbooking, because that match needed the overbooking. It needed the weapons and the bullshit and Jericho coming in there and getting involved, which Jericho was the most over guy on the show, period. I mean, it's just, the fans are eating his shit up.
Yeah. You know, we're going to talk about Jericho. Cause Chris, we've done years of, reaction shows. We've seen it, in our circles that Johnny doesn't like talking about, but dude, Jericho was getting shit on. Jericho was getting shit on, man. And totally, sometimes rightfully totally. So sometimes, his character would fall flat, sloppy matches, whatever. But you got to give this guy credit. I mean, it was 18 years ago when he was doing like the intros to the like cruiserweight title and, you know, Gilbert and all that shit. And here he is 18 years later, still finding a way to be relevant and entertaining. And like y'all said, being the most over guy on the show.
Yeah, he's the most over face on the show. The fans are going nuts for him. You know, chanting stupid idiot and all that sort of stuff. He's got this stuff over like a list, and just the word it. I mean, he's got this stuff over. I mean, the guy's great at what he does. Not inside the ring as much, but outside the ring, he's tremendous this year since he's adapted this new character. And he, like I said, he's the biggest babyface on the whole show. And so it's just a weird thing in wrestling now with this, but the main event shows that you can still do what you're supposed to do, which, we'll, again, we'll talk about that later. But regarding this match, I mean, Owens going over didn't surprise me. I think that this match is designed to help get over the Owens-Jericho turn that's coming eventually. I can see Stephanie or Mick Foley saying that Owens has to have Jericho to win his matches. And then the only way that they know that Owens can defend this title, you know, without Jericho involved, is if he defends against Jericho. I can see that coming down the line. Or something's going to happen to break these guys up. And Owens kind of has to be the champion for that to take place. Rollins, again, he's got to be out of the title scene. They got to face him. I would love to see Rollins and Rusev have a feud right now. I think that would be great for Rollins, you know, to get in that situation, because you know, both don't have a title. Well, it would be a fresh feud. You know, put them together and see what happens. I don't know who Reigns would be with next, but do something like that and go from there. I mean, that would be the cool thing. But Owens and Jericho's got to be the program, and Jericho is going to be the babyface, no doubt. And it's going to be curious to see how it takes place. But
do you think? Because right now they're both heels, even though he's the most over babyface.
He's a heel.
He's a heel.
Who?
Jericho.
Yeah, but he's the most over guy on the show.
Oh, he's the most. Yeah, I agree. Will, and to your point about his congratulating him for his evolution of this character, in the past couple of weeks, as suddenly the list gets over, which, again, right, Chris, the most ridiculous thing in the world, and he makes this shit fucking over to where they're selling list t-shirts, for fuck's sakes. And it was getting over, and people cheering, and he's turned it up again and evolved it to where he's not completely a goofball, that he's vicious now. And even though people are cheering him and loving him for it, he's determined to stretch this out to be a bad guy again. But now he's a vicious bad guy with this, you know, ridiculous character. It's a constant evolution he's doing character. And Will, you're right. Here's the thing, though.
Here's the thing, and to me, this is kind of what I was talking about earlier. Speaks to the bigger point of what's happening with these crowds is they are rejecting wholesale, and they've been doing it for years, but they're rejecting wholesale that the direction the company wants to go in. They want to make Roman Reigns a white meat baby face. Screw you. We didn't pick that guy. We're going to boo the shit out of him at every show. You know what I mean? They're going to try and make Daniel Bryan a heel. No, whatever. We're doing the yes chance. We're going to force you to turn him babyface. We're going to do the 50-50 with John Cena. Jericho's supposed to be a heel. We're going to make sure that, you know, he's the most over guy on the show. I don't think it's so much a rejection of heel and face lines as it is, we don't like the direction you're going in. And I think that's really – and it's been a big theme that's been going on for years. It's not
Jericho. I don't think that's the problem. Jericho is just entertaining.
I understand that, Chris. But what I'm saying, though, is, you know, you're already perceiving him as the face in the feud.
Oh, obviously.
I don't trust the company to say, hey, let's run with him as a face doing the same shtick. We saw it with New Day. New Day was one of the most over acts as a heel act. It was kind of when they, you know, turned babyface, then they had the booty-os, and they were still doing some entertaining shtick.
Eventually,
they all get stale because of the overkill that this company tends to
do. And that's the thing. When Jericho turns, his shtick won't be the same, for sure.
Right.
But, I mean, that's the thing.
But to Chris's point, the crowd reaction for the Jericho stuff is not a rejection thing that you mentioned, Will, which of course is evident and of course is happening. This is, we can't believe how entertaining this is, and we're reacting to how entertaining it is.
And it's off, and it's perceived, and probably rightfully so, that this is Jericho just being Jericho, you know, coming up with silly shit like the list and stuff like that, and it's stuff like that. They think it's organic. It's just something that the writers aren't making him do that. They can tell what's what's sincere and what's not sincere. That's the deal with Roman Reigns. That's what got Roman Reigns so much shit.
That's right. Because
everything he did was insincere. It came off as he was,
Jericho was scripted.
Right.
And Jericho is like, we all heard that story about the one time the writers came up to Jericho with a script and he took it and crumpled it up and threw it in the corner and started talking to somebody else.
And that's Owens. Oh, and that's why everybody loves Owens so much.
Yeah, Owens does that too.
Owens is not scripted at all. I mean, you could tell. I mean, there's no way they write that guy's
They couldn't possibly write his stuff because it's too good.
No, he's too quick on his feet. That's he's everything is so quick, and that's why people like him. Because he's genuine. He's sincere. And that's and that goes to your point, Will, about the things getting pushed down people's throats. You know,
absolutely.
That's the deal with that. And they're kind of starting to get better with that with other people, but Roman Reigns, they are just damn bound and determined with him to ride that storm. And that's Vince's, that's Vince's thing, but, you know, I don't know. It's interesting, but back to the match real quick. The match was good. I mean, of the three cells is the lesser of the cells. And that's not a slight, but it was good for what it was.
All right, let's move on. And this next match is kind of – actually, Chris, and we're going to talk about this in a minute, but this division has much bigger problems than following a Hell in the Cell.
Oh, boy.
TJ Perkins versus Brian Kendrick. Now, listen, Johnny, you were – I'm pretty sure you were on the show. Chris, I know you were on the show. We talked about this whatever pay-per-view we watched the week before these Cruiserweights debuted on Raw. Man, I was excited only because I loved what they did with the Cruiserweight Championship. I thought it was going to be fresh, genuine, new. Man, this has been, in terms of the potential and the payoff with what we've been given, absolute disaster, in my view. And I'm not saying they can't turn it around, turn the ship around. I mean, it's probably the first time since, what, 97 that they've even paid attention to Cruiserweights. But, man, it just... I do not like the way they've booked this division at all. Everything that was great about the Cruiserweight tournament is absolutely missing from this division on this show. And a lot of times, same people, sometimes they didn't like guys who were in that tournament. Other guys just weren't ready for the big league. Sometimes they didn't see some guys don't speak English. It didn't matter in the tournament. Here, you got this convoluted storyline about Kendrick asking Perkins to do a job. I mean, I'm done with that.
Let me start with this one.
I will let you start, Chris.
Please, because I got a lot to say on this subject. The Cruiserweight Classic was a magical type thing. You know, it was every week was just fantastic television. Everything was great because it was left in its own world to do what it was supposed to do. Well, they get the guys up on the main roster TJP's a great performer. He really is. I mean, he's tremendous inside the ring. His issue, and he's not a dynamic guy outside the ring. He can talk, but he's not dynamic. He's not what they need. If you're going to push this division, and this you're going to make this a brand new deal, you know, big presentation, you need to have somebody as the face of the division that's going to be up to the task in every way. Inside the ring, Perkins is definitely, you know, can do it with the best of them. He's a tremendous worker. But again, he doesn't have that superstar charisma inside the ring at times. He doesn't have the great promo ability. And then, you know, if you're going to get a guy like that, you need to accentuate his strengths. Well, no. This is what they do. They put him in with Brian Kendrick, and I got no problem with Kendrick. But Kendrick isn't the right guy to be into this early feud to make this division stand out. You really need flashy guys involved, guys who can go up there and just go to war out there, just doing high spots, to differentiate itself from the rest of the show. Kendrick?
Chris, hold on. I mean, dude, you got 3 hours. You could do like, okay, the first half hour block is going to be like our Cruiserweight division. You know, I mean, I've been to enough live shows. Dude, they could just roll out like different colored tarps or you know, whatever they're called, the ring drapes. I don't know. No, not the mat itself. The little drapes that surround the ring. I don't know, dude. I'm aprons? Tired. Aprons. There you go. That hard word that I couldn't think of. They could roll out different colored aprons. Like, they could do, like, a little show within a show. You know what I mean?
Yeah, instead of just throwing them out Vince randomly. Yeah, but Vince and Kevin ain't going to go for that.
It doesn't matter what they're going to go for. I'm saying that there is potential to make it different. Well, to make it tune in.
Oh, believe me. It's there is potential.
No, they actually do the different aprons and colored robes.
Yeah, but
actually do.
No. I'm saying, Johnny.
I'm saying the show
that way. I'm saying make a segment.
I get it. I'm just saying that it's one of the things they've done. Is like, see, this is different.
It's purple robes. They make it purple or stuff like that.
You're missing my point.
But it's not. There's not the charm there that was in the tournament, and Kendrick. I said Kendrick is not the guy to have the first big feud with, and especially when you know his persona in the tournament was a babyface, basically. Yes.
And then this idea of please lay down for me, man. I'm so sick of this.
And making TJ and TJ's dialogue and his promos has been horrific. All this stuff about the video games and these made up stories about their connections in the past and all this other shit. It's just so fake, so corny. It's terrible. I mean, it is just terrible. And it sucks. I mean, Perkins I don't know who could have succeeded with that, you know, with what he's had to deal with.
Right.
And it's put a damper on the vision. These guys aren't getting any heat. I mean, the other guys that have worked, you know, like Richard Swann, Serge Alexander, you know, Nice, you know, they've gone out there and they do stuff way more flashier than the guys that's in the main feud, you know, for the title. That, and, you know, that's not what you need. You need to, if you're going to push this thing out in the forefront and try to make this thing special, you got to go 100 at the top. You got to go out there full force, guns blazing, and make it what it is, not have, you know, Perkins and Kendrick, who are basically a lot alike, going out there and doing a whole bunch of mat wrestling it's fine. I mean, their matches are fine technically, but it's not out there, you know, trying to win over a crowd that's not used to it. This isn't, you know, the Armories in Florida. This isn't, you know, different clubs in New York or wherever Evolve run shows at. This is 17,000 seat buildings of people that don't know these guys. So, you know, you go out there and you just fucking go crazy. You know, you put guys and book them that way. Their problem is they're not going to do that. You know, they're not going to let them be what they need to be. And I don't know if that's going to change. I know we got, you know, Grandma Talik is going to be coming soon whenever he gets done with Mexico. And they're going to have other guys coming in. Jack Gallagher will show up eventually. And, you know, guys like that. Noam Dar hasn't even debuted yet.
I mean, but even if they debut, if they're booked the way that the guys that they've already showcased are booked, it's not going to matter. It's just wasted talent.
There's no optimism right now in how they're going to be portrayed. And it's sad.
Yeah, and you two were very optimistic about this.
I thought that Triple H and Ryan Warden, those guys would have won it over, but obviously not. Vince and Kevin and the people that are in that circle, they are staunch in what they believe in, and it seems like they're giving charity work because it seems like okay, we'll let you do this, we'll let you have your little project. But we're going to put it in the death slot on television every week,
or after a Hell in the Cell on the pay per view.
Yeah, we're gonna do that to you. We'll let you have. You know what it's like? It's like the old women's division.
It's a good. Yeah, it's a good comparison. Before the NXT Renaissance, right?
Yeah, and something will happen. Somebody's going to have to go out there and be a Rey Mysterio Jr. And maybe Grand Metalik could be it. But there needs to be a Rey Mysterio Jr. to break that division out. It's just what they need. And regarding the match, I know we ain't talking about the match yet. The match, again, technically a good match. No heat.
Dead.
Fair.
Dead.
Fans didn't care. You know, the last few minutes was fine. The finish was kind of expected since Kendrick lost on Monday. I figured he would win. he kind of needed to win, and now he needs to transition that belt over to somebody like Cedric Alexander, Gran Metalik, or somebody that can, you know, go out there and show some flash.
All right, Johnny, your thoughts on this match?
Well, I think the Rey Mysterio guy you're talking about is going to be Cedric. Definitely. With all of that, there's a lot I agree with, and there's a lot I disagree with.
So, well, what do you disagree with?
Surf this here. Yes, TJ's promos, dude, are the worst.
It's not his fault.
It's not just him, but Johnny, I'm talking about the bigger picture with the cruiserweight.
Well, you asked me a question. Can I?
I don't want the just the little examples of TJ's promo. I want the bigger picture with the cruiserweight division. Focus on that, and then focus on the match, please.
Okay. You know, just throw me off with everything I planned to say.
Thanks. I want your opinion on this. I want your opinion on this. I apologize for throwing you off.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, that's one of the things I don't like, is TJ's presentation, TJ's stiffness on those promos are just brutal. They're brutal. What I do like is I do like the story that they're telling, as made up as it is, with TJ and Kendrick. Kendrick, this is my last chance and you owe me, so lay down for me. I like that from a story perspective.
Oh, God.
From a story perspective, I like that. It establishes Kendrick as a heel, and he's been a heel. Whether or not Daniel Bryan was cheering for him during the Cruiserweight thing, he acted like a heel throughout the entire tournament. He cheated throughout the tournament and was being this desperate old heel.
Have you gotten a sense of, besides the whining in the backstage skits, have you really gotten a sense of desperation from Kendrick?
Yes, I have from Kendrick. His whole thing is like, I let this slip away from me once, so I'm not going to let it slip away from me again. And then you have TJ going like, well, you need to press restart on your video game, pal. And I'm like, ugh, it's awful. You know, I'm acknowledging that it's not been good. I like that story, but again, to Chris's point, they're not doing the flippy-do stuff to differentiate themselves while those other guys are. And it's not getting over. And in this show in particular, I wasn't going to blame the fact they had to follow the Hell in a Cell, but that's part of it. I mean, it's definitely part of why the crowd didn't give a shit. But it's two reasons. It's not just one or the other. It had to follow that end.
It had a shitty storyline, right?
And they weren't made to care that much because, you know, everyone kind of likes TJ, but no one gives a shit, you know? But I think what they're going to move to is it's going to be Cedric because Cedric's like the golden boy right now with them. He's so over. And they're saving, and I think he's going to be your Rey Mysterio guy. As far as the story goes, I like that story. You know, sorry. But I'm agreeing with you about the other stuff. Man. And you still are arguing.
One of the problems, though, that doesn't get talked about nearly enough is that, you know, back in the day in WCW, when the Cruiserweight division was what it was, that's the only place where you would see guys doing the stuff that they do.
Agreed.
On WWE main roster right now, you see it in almost every match. You see high spots that Cruiserweights used to do. I mean, look at Kevin Owens, Seth Rollins going out there and doing all the moves that they did.
Big E doing his plancha to the outside, or, you know, the spear to the outside all the time. Like, that's something that you wouldn't see, like, big guys doing in the past.
And then you send the Cruiserweights out there and they go lay on the mat. You know, I mean,
I'm wondering how, because apparently there's going to be a Cruiserweight show on the network, and I'm wondering how that works within the dynamic of what they're doing as far as.
My buddy Charles told me that what they're going to do with that is just tape that before a SmackDown or Raw. Like, it's not even going to be special. Like, they're not going to try and do it like in front of NXT sized crowds. They're going to try and do it just like like they would do main event or superstars or something, you know.
Which, but I'm wondering, you know, when half the crowd has been even there. There's going to be writing within that show and storylines within that show.
Or it could just be matches thrown out randomly, like main event and superstars.
I would imagine it'd be, they'd have, like, that sounds like when they did ECW and had their little separate entrance because they do it at the same tapings. But they had their own storylines.
It's a waste of potential. All right, let's move on. So now we got the tag team titles, New Day versus Sheamus and Cesaro. I know a lot of people don't like Sheamus. I like Sheamus. I just, you know, another guy that even when he goes away, he comes back and nobody still gives a shit. But I kind of like the idea of him and Cesaro together. But the New Day, we've already talked about them, so I don't want to go into what's right and wrong with them. But what I do want to do is talk about this match. Johnny, what did you think of this tag title match and the finish? Which, you know,
me and Pete on This Week in Wrestling, cheap plug, thought that there was a possibility this could steal the show, and it didn't. Based on, I think, the Hell in a Cell performances, to be perfectly honest with you. But I thought they had a really fun match. I like the story of Sheamus and Cesaro. You know, we've seen the tag team partners who don't get along trope. You know, that's the most Vince Russo-ism trope ever, but we haven't seen it in a long time. And the way these guys are doing it, especially with their backstage bit, and Sheamus is the best at it. I'm with you. I love Sheamus. He's one of my favorite wrestlers, and I like his character work too, especially as a heel. As a babyface, not so much. And I thought they did have a really fun match. I like the fact they put Xavier in there, because as babyface, Xavier has to show that he's a bit that he's a threat and not just the wimp guy who interferes. And I guess also imagine Kofi is injured. He's been getting injured a lot lately. And as far as the finish went, you know, it was definitely a NWA late 80s finish. You know, Dusty booked this shit. But what I took from it was, as New Day was leaving, they were showing that they were spent and exhausted and gotten their asses beat. And got lucky. And I'm wondering if they're going to play up on that, as what we were talking about earlier, for a possible change in the New Day, or a split, or what have you, and where this goes with Cesaro and Sheamus, as long as they got the win, even though it was a DQ, and, the New Day, you know, that was a cheap win, you know, and they looked like they had their asses handed to them as they were crawling back up the ramp, and I thought that was interesting. I was like, I want to see where that goes storyline-wise. But the match itself, I thought, was that's a weird spot too, because you have the death slot that the cruiserweights got put in, and then the tag match with the New Day, who, despite everything else, are super fucking over, and they put them there.
Christ.
And they are super fucking over, dude. Don't fucking deny that. And
not tonight.
Yeah, but it's still like two death slot matches between that, and they were counting on the fact that they are over in most cities to, you know, gets a reaction of the crowd, and they manage to bring him back from the near silent death during the cruiserweight match. But that crowd was waiting for that main event. They were waiting for that fucking main event. You could tell during the cruiserweight match and during this match.
All right.
Okay. But I thought it was a good match.
Cool. All right. Chris?
Yeah, it was okay. I was really hoping Sheamus and Cesaro would have won this match. I really think they should have. They won. I think they dropped the ball here. But the more I think about it, they're going to ride fucking New Day until that damn record. I mean, that's obviously what they're playing to. They're going to beat Demolition's record. So it's one of those things where we got to make them, we got to keep them champions so they can break the record. That's not organic. You know, it's basically letting you know that, you know, we're going to force this to happen. It just doesn't work. They're past stale right now in that role. And they need to make a change. Something needs to be changed in that division. And Doc and Carl against Cesaro and Sheamus would be a fun fresh feud for the tag titles. You know, and have Sheamus as our event, you know, they win the belts, and then they start becoming more of a cohesive unit as they get along. And man, there's a lot of stuff you can do here, but it looks like we're going to go back to New Day against Doc and Carl, which we just had, you know, in the summer. And boy, was that great. So
yeah, it sucked.
I don't know. I just don't know. It's like we're going in circles.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, let's jump right to the main event, the third Hell in the Cell match. First ever Hell in the Cell, Sasha versus Charlotte. First ever Hell in a Cell match with two women. And I kind of like it as the main event. I was happy they put it as the main event. You know, my just give you a story. My brother-in-law was like, why are they putting this on after the Universal title? And, you know, I was trying to explain to him. He doesn't read message boards or listen to podcasts or anything. I was like, you know, I mean, they're doing the Ronda Rousey thing. You know, they're trying to elevate the women's title to equal standing, I guess. And I think he bought it. You know, I wasn't going to try and get too in-depth. Well, you see, Vince McMahon feels this way. I wasn't going to...
It was in Boston.
But what you said was exactly right. That's exactly the point.
It's trying to do their Ronda Rousey. But what did you think of this match, Johnny, Sasha versus Charlotte?
Well, the first thing I want to mention is the entrances. Because since they announced this, on message boards and everywhere within the community, it's all like, well, is it really the main event for the women if there's three? And this and that. Those entrances were made to tell you, yes, this is the main event. Because you had Charlotte coming out, being carried like Jerry Lawler used to, you know, on a throne by four Roman gladiators. And then you got Sasha doing her Escalade entrance with her bodyguards. And one of the major points of that was both had entrances where big, giant, muscular men were subservient to the women they were bringing out. And that's not accidental. That was totally on purpose, and I love it. Fantastic. Then, though, as the cage is coming down and they're both just standing there like, oh, we're so proud of this, I started groaning because I hated that whole, you know, we're so proud to be in the Hell in the Cell. You shouldn't be. It's supposed to be a death thing, which they got through with the Foley stuff. But then Charlotte attacks them during that solemn ceremony. I was like, bravo, that's great, good, you killed that. And they did some tricks. They're doing, you know, they have to differentiate, and they're doing some tricks. They're going to do crowd brawling work. We've seen this in other Hell in the Cell matches that start in the crowd. And yes, was it a bit of a crutch for them? Sure, but that's been a crutch for men as well. It doesn't, you know, mean anything. And they had great brawl in the crowd. And when, of course, they're taking Sasha out on the stretcher, I was like, oh, they're recreating the Foley thing from 98. I'm good with it. And they did that. And then when the match actually went into the cell, I thought they tore it down. I thought they had a great fucking match. I thought they tore it down. I thought they brought, like you mentioned, they brought the hate. And I could excuse any sloppiness when you're bringing the fucking hate. And they did. You know, they totally... I could spot the stuff they were doing. I'm like, I know why they did that, but it all worked. And I thought they lived up to the main event completely. And the ending was a little funny with that table spot where, I mean, Sasha's not going through that fucking table. She's 98 pounds, whatever, no matter even twice. But that made it look even more brutal. It made it look more real. And then, you know, the roll up with, well, my roommate is like, oh, and now she's completely wearing a thong. And I just like, shut up, these are serious women in a serious competition. But no laughs, nothing. Ugh, bunch of humorous motherfuckers. I thought it was really good.
Sorry, really man. Good. I was just letting you talk, man. I wasn't trying to interrupt.
I mean, dude, Sasha Banks is hotter than hell, and the match ends with her basically wearing a thong in a big roll up. every creep everywhere is making a still shot of that fucking pinball. But I thought it came out of nowhere, but it's for professional wrestling wise finish, kind of out of nowhere, you know, and that's it. But they were going for the brutality thing, I think, with the way that pinfall happened. But up until then, I thought the match was outstanding. I thought these ladies did an amazing job. So,
Chris,
there you go.
Best thing on the show by a country mile. Everything was right as far as the presentation of the match. It had the heat. It was the only match on the show that had the right heat. I mean, the fans were into it. You could feel the hatred coming from both of them towards each other. Charlotte has gotten really, really strong in her character as a heel. She is so hateable, and in the right way, not the wrong way. She's hateable in the right way. I did not really care for the way too long deal with the stretcher. It's so that they've done way too much over the years and too hokey. And I thought it detracted from the hot start that they were going for. And eventually it picked it back up. But a man's like, oh, this is just way too long here. The sloppiness, I agree with Johnny, definitely. It added to the match because it gave that feel to it that, you know, this was, you know, a match that was unpredictable and out of control. You know, the table break, you know, that table spot on the floor. I'm curious, my buddy Afraid Movement on Twitter also brought this up. You know, what was planned there? Something had to be planned for that yeah. table, and how integral was it to what the match was supposed to be? And they brought another table in the ring, but it was not the same, you know, after that regarding the match wise. I did like that Sausage, you know, the spot where she used the chair to break up the figure eight. I thought that was cool. And they were really hitting each other hard there. I mean, it was really, really fun. And Charlotte just ragdolling Sasha like crazy. And then the finish was what it was. It just kind of was like, really? That's it? And then, you know, it's Boston, Sasha's hometown. Vince McMahon's running the show. She's losing. And there's no way around it. Hometown people lose.
Well, I thought the same thing, too, but CM Punk won the title in Chicago, so no, not always.
Yeah, one out of 100? Okay. There's always an exception.
I'm saying you see that shit more on Raw than you do on pay-per-views. I'm just saying.
It happens a lot. If we go back and look, it's happened
for decades, too. It's not just...
Yeah, this is a 20-year deal.
In main events on pay-per-views, it's not as prevalent as it is on every other show. Just
oh, I don't know about that.
Okay, but let's get a nerd like Bix or somebody to look that up. Chris Harrington would be great to do that.
You need a PowerPoint presentation.
But yeah, Sasha, I mean, she's not going to be around long as far as the performer. I mean, she does some of the craziest shit, you know, for a girl her size, man. It's not the fact that she's a girl, it's the fact that, you know, her size and taking these wild, crazy bumps. I mean, she's in it and she don't care. And, you know, I respect that. Respect the hell out of it for her. She, you know, it's like, I'm going to do it my way. And, you know, whatever happens, happens, yeah. You know, but if you're going to be like that, you know, you better acknowledge later on in life that, you know, hey, this is the price I'm paying for this in the end, which I, you know, hope she will, but, yes, those two went out there and they put on a hell of a damn performance, and they were worthy to be in the main event. They always were, should have been anyway, and that sealed the deal tonight. Now, what happens now? Like I said, maybe Bayley and Charlotte becomes the main feud. Sasha, who knows? I mean, Nia Jax has been, you know, laying around the weeds. I don't know what's going to happen with her. Emma, of course, is coming back up. Don't know if she's going to be a face or a heel. The Raw women is kind of up in the air right now. you know, it's regarding, you know, who's going to be with who. So, who knows with Sasha. But tonight, they definitely had their moment. And they, like I said, they delivered, and they should be proud.
Yeah, for like the Sasha, on. I mean, she really should have listened to Mick Foley's advice, because, you know, you keep doing this stuff to your body, eventually you're going to be doing a really shitty reality show on the network. You don't want that to happen.
Oh, and I was glad they didn't have Foley come out there or try to stop the match, too. I was dreading it. Oh, man, they're going to do some shit here, you know, get him out there. And thank God they didn't do that. So I know the fan, I mean, that building, though, the air was taken completely out of it when the finish happened, though. And that sucks.
Yeah. It's not really winning shows. Well, I mean, I don't know. I think Charlotte's improved enough, you know, since earlier days. Even, you know, when she first started on Raw, that I don't mind her being in that position. You know, it's just someone who is as over as Sasha, or like people love as much Sasha. I wish that they would give her the kind of run that like they're giving New Day, or that they gave which Bella was it that had the belt forever,
Nikki Bella, so she could
break AJ's record. I wish they kind of give it like a Sasha, that kind of run, or at least until she breaks down and, you know, can't.
That's
go
the
anymore.
Thing. You know, from all reports, Vince just he doesn't think she has the long haul, you know, direction. Dude, because of the way she works, she's too dangerous.
I understand that, but there's also riding a horse until it drops. You know what I mean?
I agree.
That's something
agree
this company does not do. It's they find reasons to not run.
I agree with
shit
you.
That's hot. It's like, it's some excuse. It's, oh, they can't talk. Who gives a shit? Daniel Bryan was not a good talker. But you know what he was? He was a genuine talker. You know, Sasha Banks.
He became a great talker, though.
But the point is, though, is that, like, I mean, when he was force-fed lines, he looked so awkward. But you could tell that he was being genuine out there. Even when he was like, you know, trying to recite his lines.
Let me finish.
Wait.
I'm sorry.
Same thing with Sasha. Let her run with it. Roman Reigns is getting booed out of buildings. Turn him fucking heel and let him run with it. That's what I'm saying. They don't run with shit. They have this little idea in their mind. They stick with shit until it dies, and then they try and dig themselves out of holes. They don't run with shit. And when they run with shit that's fucking hot, it works.
Yeah. Welcome to wrestling. I think the horse they're running with is Charlotte, though. That's the problem.
It's the wrong horse.
I kind of disagree. I think Charlotte has turned it. I think Charlotte has turned
Chris,
it
who's
up.
More over, Charlotte or Sasha?
Who's more over?
And what, who's been over? Who's the crowd been behind?
I mean, Sasha's more over, definitely. As far as over. Yeah.
Like, Sasha should have won the belt at fucking Mania in front of 100,000 people. That's my point.
She's more over, yes.
What I'm saying is I think they're going with Charlotte because that's, I mean, that's the person in the character.
My point is, it's
But she's earned it. I mean, her transformation over the last couple of months has been outstanding. She's now Charlotte Flair again, by the way.
They dropped that tonight, though.
No, well, not under boots, they didn't, because it said...
They didn't acknowledge that tonight at all.
They did. They called her Charlotte Flair a number of times tonight.
When?
During the pre-show, during any of the build-up stuff. And on her boots, it's CF now. You know, they've done this on TV the past couple of weeks, too.
Because everybody was talking about, oh, the Flair, I guess they didn't drop the Flair name again.
Because what they did...
Charlotte fucks a lot.
What? Yeah. What they did was they broke her away from Rick, and she's like, I don't want any of this anymore. But she's now truly embraced the legacy of it. She's doing the woos. She's Charlotte Flair again. When she comes out for interviews, she's in a nice suit. She's doing her dad again, but it's not
a
true imitation.
Johnny, the point
anymore.
Isn't that Charlotte isn't a good wrestler or that she can't do the job. Mm-hmm. The point is, by far, Sasha was the most insanely over girl out of any of those
girls.
No,
she's the one everyone's cheering for. I'm saying who
it's not just cheering. I'm not just talking about cheering. I'm saying kind of transcendent. I'm saying that Sasha was the wow. That's what I'm talking about, Johnny. I'm saying that instead of like, oh, let's do this little project over here, go with the wow. And this company hasn't gone with the wow in a long time. Even Daniel Bryan, they had to bite and pull and scream them to get there. And CM Punk had to quit to mess up their Mania plans and redo everything. That's what I'm talking about. When they were at their most popular, even when they weren't popular, really, the wow is Austin, you run with Austin. The wow is a heel Rock, you run with heel Rock. The wow is Foley jumping off a cage, you go with Foley doing his thing.
Although after Foley jumped off the cage, he was like in Nowheresville for months.
You're right. Until he put a sock
on his fucking hand.
Right, but you understand what I'm saying, though.
Let's wrap this up because this is going to get way long. So
I don't know. The point is, they used to run with these horses. They don't run with them anymore when they should. And, I think it kills a lot of enthusiasm from the crowd. That was kind of my point before, is that the crowd loses their enthusiasm because then they beat you ahead with the stick saying, we're not going to let your guy win, and people aren't invested enough in their opponents or hate their opponents enough to care anymore. And that's kind of my point.
And the problem is they've got this hard on about Charlotte's pay-per-view record, too, and they constantly bring that up. She's undefeated on pay-per-views or whatever. They're constantly bringing that up.
Well, they did until she lost, and they dropped that. So.
No, they did it tonight.
I didn't hear it.
Yeah, they did it tonight.
Okay.
All right. So, Johnny, thumbs up.
Definitely a thumbs up show, and I didn't think it was going to be because going in, I when we started, I was like, three, really?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. And they surprised me, and I thought they put on a really good show. And it was the three Hell in the Cell matches that got me.
Saved it. Yeah, of course. All right, Chris?
Oh, man. This is conflicting.
You had a great main event.
That's the only reason why I give it a thumbs up. I mean, the other two sub-matches were fine. They were good matches. They were, entertaining. The booking on this show was not good in a lot of places. There's some of the stuff that's going on overall is an overriding factor. It's just not good. But that main event's the only reason why. I'll give it a thumbs up.
Okay. Johnny, before we wrap it up, anything going on Brainbuster Titans? Yay or nay?
No on Brainbuster, yes on Titans.
Awesome.
The new Titans up there that we did a couple months ago. And Mystery Science Titans, the biggest ripoff title of anything ever, but I got...
That was real creative.
I got voted down on that one. I got voted way down on that one. I was like, no, that's a ripoff. But we're still doing those, and they are a lot of fun. So thank you.
All right. Fair enough. And Chris, I know on a recent... Between the Sheets, you had Dr. Keith Lipinski on there, and I had a chance to meet Dr. Keith at a recent AAW show that I went to, which was awesome. One of the best live shows I've ever attended. So if you're in the Chicago area, make sure you go check out AAW. And if you get a chance to meet Dr. Keith, I recommend it. Great guy. Super sweet guy. So, Chris, what else on Between the Sheets and Exxon?
Yeah, that was the last week's show, so go check that out if you folks haven't listened to it yet. This week's show, which should drop the same day as this show, Dave Musgrave, our Canadian friend, makes his debut on Between the Sheets, talking about the week that was October 25th through November the 1st, 1997. So that's Halloween Havoc and the Rey Mysterio Eddie Guerrero match, which is maybe the greatest pay-per-view match of all time. And we talk about that show. The problem with fan riots that week, as there were multiple riots and multiple promotions, a fake riot at Halloween Havoc, and real riots in Tijuana and ECW, which are just wild stuff to look at and talk about. Just all kinds of cool stuff. The ominous note on the Observer the week before Survivor Series about Bret Hart is great. It is so great. Because, I mean, it's like if you didn't know what was coming, and nobody did until the week before the show, it's like you read this like, oh boy. So Yeah, we'll talk about that and talk about other things. Of course, our Patreon, patreon.com/tweenthesheets. You can go there and, you know, donate a little bit of money if you want to. And if you donate $5, you get to listen to the first Patreon special show we did with Pete Lederberg talking about the early days of the WWF expansion, the spring 83 to spring 84. Lots of fun stuff, including talk about a match that supposedly happened. Will, you'll like this. In 1983, in Los Angeles, or somewhere between, I think it's San Jose, between Tony Atlas and Negro Casas.
Oh my god! Oh, I don't know. Mm. I think I'm feeling like Atlas eats Casas up in 1983, man.
It's on Graham's site, so I mean he's got it from somewhere that Casas worked two shots for WWF in 1983 in California, and I'm just like, huh? And one was against Tony Atlas.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So lots of good talk on those on that show. So go check it out. Exile. I've been slacking on that lately. I need to get back on and get another show out. But
only three a week?
No, I ended Exile well over a month. Of course, you know, check out our new SoundCloud.com/BTSPod and all those new places that were shows on Google Play and Stitcher, all that.
Deal. Well, I'll tell you what, man.
We are supposed to promote a pilot season on all the shows. It is now pilot season on the Place to Be Nation PWO podcast feed. And if you, the listener, have an idea, something different, something new, something about an hour long, something fills a niche that you don't think is out there in the wrestling podcast landscape, we're looking for new shows. So it's pilot season.
Record something. I got a new one. Yeah. Can I do a new show? I'm going to call it Johnny Hates WWE and explain what you don't like about WWE.
Apparently old voices aren't allowed. We want new voices.
Oh, boo. Boo. Yeah, I don't want to hear anybody new.
But no, new voices. I was told that we're supposed to get this over on every show. So there you go.
Okay, well, shit. Next. Okay, so we will promote pilot season on the next reaction show, which I probably will not be a part of the Survivor Series Goldberg Lesnar reaction show. I got to play that one by ear. I might be on the road doing the Good Helmet World Tour.
This is like the never ending world tour, man.
It is till the money runs out, man. So, you know, actually, I was talking to Chris before we went on the air, and I'll probably do a run in Atlanta. You know,
nice,
and then me and Musgrave, who Chris just mentioned, we're going to rendezvous in Pittsburgh and go watch a Penguins game. So,
if you could get your way to Colorado, my local indie just got TV on some dumb station. But you know who's now working there? Vince Russo.
Oh no, I will not be going there.
Vince Russo is now in Colorado, helping to run my indie.
Oh no.
Yep.
Dude, I'm sorry to hear that, buddy.
I know.
Oh, that's so painful. I knew he was in Colorado, man, but just to even hear that he's like still a
But he got them television. He got them television possibly get worse. It's not the best
ending. It can get worse because it promotes bad thought in wrestling. That's always been my argument is that I'd rather have a promotion go out of business because of bad wrestling and bad character-driven lines. I mean, the boys get to work and all that crap. It doesn't matter. When wrestling's bad, to me, it actively hurts the idea of pro wrestling.
Well, he hasn't hurt it yet, but there's not a lot to hurt. But, seeing him on trying to watch my local indie on their TV thing, and I got to hear Vince Russo, it's the worst.
Oh, that sucks. Sorry. Anyway, I don't know. We'll play it by ear, guys, for next month. I know you two will definitely be on the reaction show. Maybe get a Dylan or Devin or, you know, Papa. Darren or Dustin.
We want Papa. Or
somebody. Yeah, get somebody on here. I tried to get my buddy Dr. Death Steve Williams. Try to get him on the show tonight, but that was a no-go. So either way, I want to thank everybody who's stayed with us this long. And we'll be back for Survivor Series, the next one.
I believe
only one in November, is that right, Chris?
Yes, it's dual brand.
Okay, cool. So we'll be back for Survivor Series next month. And I want to thank everybody for listening to Place to Be Nation. And until then, bye-bye.